Willkommen zum Biennale Podcast.
Mein Name ist Alexandra Zavier and on this first episode of our podcast series for the Biennale, we are going to talk about this year's program. And of course, for this, I'm welcoming Eva Sangiorgi, director of the Biennale. Hallo Eva.
Hallo Alexandra.
How are you doing so shortly after the press conference, between the start of the festival? What are the main things you still have to do now, very urgently?
All small details, you know, before welcoming the guests and start with the film's projections. So, yeah, 1,000 little details, but we are very happy. I think I'm very happy because it's about to happen. So it's an entire year of work. And now, yeah, this strange imagination is populated by real people. That is wonderful.
How can we imagine that program coming together in a kind of like mental state of things?
I think that is kind of gradual every year, more or less in the same tempo, in the sense that the Biennale follows the cycle of festivals, and as we try to bring together kind of an accurate selection of what happened in other festivals. The closer we get to the new edition, the more rich and conspicuous is the selection already. And so I feel that is coming together. But a big part is the retrospective of the historical program. So when this is settled, when some other theme and topics are also getting a shape, I feel that the festival is getting ready and ready.
This year, the historical programs are very special again. There is one on 50 years of Chilean cinema. Can you say something about that briefly? Because it's a very, very rich program.
That historical program is curated by Hayden Guest, the director of the Harvard Film Archive, and Dominga Sotomayor, who's a brilliant Chilean contemporary filmmaker. And it started out of a conversation with them, and I was delighted by the idea of having some experts putting together a program through a dialogue, a conversation between two people with different backgrounds, different generations also, and different interests towards cinema in a way, one creator and an archivist. And then I was not in the beginning built up around the idea of the anniversary of the coup d'etat, but something, was not the motivation, no, the idea behind, but then could not be ignored, this fact. Yeah, we realized we were discussing about that actually by chance would be the commemoration of the 50 years, and of course the films spoke or speak still for themselves, and even the title are not turned around as this idea. The films are just different expressions in different, very different kind of languages and forms of the diversity of these 50 years, in a way, of Chilean films. So they recount the history of a country through also personal relationship and history, minimal stories with this big historical events in the background, but not only the coup d'etat, because that happened 50 years ago, but all the historical memory connected to that. It's not possible for Chilean people not having that reference always in that mind because of what happened after and the resolution and the making peace with this part of history that did not really happen. And so it's not a selection of documentaries facing the topic directly only. Of course, there are some of these examples, but also different kind of films. And we found that was a little bit the core, the focus that they could put the films together, even if, as I said, is a very big diversity. And it's super interesting because it's telling also another story that is also very sad of the status or the conditions of films preservation in Chile, because we are talking about some also relevant filmmakers, but in general, anyhow, very rare gems are films that did not circulate so much, even if some are connected to renowned filmmakers, as I said, or even we have the first feature by Sebastián Lelio, who's a personality, you know, in also abroad Chile. But the conditions of the films is very sad. And so this section, this selection also talks about another urgency that is has to do with film preservation, in particular in Latin America, in particular in Chile.
The Chilean program also reflects nicely, or has a lot of strings, into the features program, into other historical programs we're showing this year. And I think that's a nice thing to see how, as you said, those 50 years of Chilean cinema is made up of films that were dealing with topics from that time, but also reflecting to the whole program, to the whole current program. It shows that those topics or themes or issues are still present in filmmakers' minds, and they are still topics that, you know, society and whether filmmaking is dealing with currently. Raúl Ruiz program, which is also a big part of this year's Festival Matrix, is also in dialogue with that, of course. And I mean, I personally can highly recommend reading the texts accompanying that program, because it's personal statements of his, analyzing his own films, explaining them, or, you know, giving his own point of view of what the filmmaking was then. So it's a very interesting read, and you immediately want to go and see all the films. And there are many films in the program that have been restored recently. Can you say something about that program?
Yes, that is really a pleasure, because it's something that I wanted to do since a long time. Raúl Ruiz is for sure a reference for Latin American filmmakers and more, no, for certain kind of filmmaking. Also in Europe, as is where he mostly produced, actually, after leaving Chile for the same reasons that we mentioned connected to the other program. I always repeat that he said that he was
the most famous unknown filmmaker. Yes.
Unknown among unknown filmmakers, exactly. So brilliant, because it's true. It's of course certain films are possibly better known or more recognizable but he had such a huge production of more than 100 films it's surprising that he's not so well known, or his film did not circulate enough. Of course, there have been some retrospectives, but it's in a way a corpus of work difficult to approach because of his extension, and also because it's very, very challenging in a way, in formal terms. So because Raúl Ruiz was an explorer and an experimenter, and wanted always to mix his own different interests, starting from the literature, of course, because most of his films are connected to that, to mathematics and the history, and also more abstract fields and philosophy. So to describe these films that are extraordinary and under many different point of views. Of course, we put together a different selection, so there are films filmed in Chile and the other European one, including the French production and the Portuguese ones or the UK ones, where there is a fantastic cast versus more smaller product filmed in Chile in the little period that he could go back. But all the films are challenging in different ways because there are many, many levels of understanding. And for sure, it was somebody who absolutely was challenging the linearity of narratives. And so there's such a richness, it's explosive in any film. And the best way to describe this complex project that give a different reading, a possible reading, was using his own words. So we put together a catalog that is very amusing and funny also, because he had this quality for sure. That is a compilation of each synopsis to describe the film is a compilation of declaration he gave in different medias in different situations. They were compiled already by his most trustful biographer and who was in charge of his personal archive. His name is Bruno Cuneo. We only translated, but it's just a joyful reading.
Yeah, and I think a lot of filmmakers might relate, because he's saying a lot about the perception of the own work in a society, and how he's talking a lot about how the Chileans hated his films and he didn't understand why they hated it for the wrong reasons and so on. It's very, very interesting, and that he also, very often people go about films and think they are politically intended and so on. So reflections on that kind of topic. But yeah, as you said, he made very high cast films like Klimt, for example. There will be a special guest.
Yes, of course. Yeah, it was so beloved also that many wanted to attend, but then it's difficult to combine the agendas. But definitely we will receive the visit of a great actress who's still very connected to these years when she worked with him, and Catherine Deneuve will present Le Temps Retrouvé, Time Regained, in a special gala at the Garten Bauchino, no? On Donnerstag, the 26th, no? On Thursday, the 26th.
There will be another one, Amadeus. There will be a special event happening.
It's just a way to remember Eric Plesco, who has been the president of the UNI during a long time, and working as a producer. He received several Academy Awards from the Academy of the United States, several Oscars, and we as Biennale, we are receiving one delivered by the family of Plesco, and so we took the chance to show Amadeus in the Garden Bauchino for a special gala that will happen on Monday the 30th.
Film acquisitions, like the putting together the program, do you notice any change in business? Like, is it more difficult? Is it easier? Because I could imagine that with, the streaming impact still, that has changed the landscape for good, actually. What are the effects maybe in that respect that you can see or notice in your business?
Yes, changing. The way of dealing with the companies which represent the films. In general, in the last decades, probably, the business itself became more and more mediated, more players, more people around, and everything is mediated extremely. There are not only the agent of actors, but there's an agent for everything. But talking about the films, in the recent years, the streamers in particular became very important players also in the world of festivals, as the film produced by them are in competitions in the most important film festivals. And they are, of course, then getting into the game with art house filmmakers or important directors in contemporary cinema. Of high production values, of course. There are always interesting films which are represented by these big players, by the streamers, and of course, as they change the rules in a little bit, in the sense that If the Cinema Awards is interesting and important still for launching a film, the following passages, the following rounds of other festivals, like the Biennale, that is a festival that makes a selection of the best, is less important, less interesting for certain. And we built anyhow very great relationships through the filmmakers themselves and the producers. And this is why we had the Netflix titles also in the past. Maybe in the case of Roma, if you remember, we had the connection through the producer. Now this is Mexican world, still the authors interested, of course, in having the film at the Biennale. And they made pressure. But it's getting sometimes very complicated to secure these films before they get into the platform. And this is something important if we relate it to the ongoing fight that the Cannes Film Festival is having, actually, with the mainstream and with Netflix. Because, of course, this is the festival that has been fighting, of course, for its own interests, against a policy that bring the film directly from the premiere to the platforms, because it's annihilating the theatrical life of a film, and this is very dangerous. And this, I mean, dangerous for us who are theater lovers, and of course also for the filmmakers. And so it's possible to make pressure through the authors themselves specifically, and we build some relationship, including with Netflix and or Amazon. But absurdly, it's easier to deal with the majors, no? These big companies of the old history of cinema than with the new players. And so we had so much fights, and also in certain cases, of course, when a film is planned to go on platforms immediately after the world premiere, there's no possibility for us to have it in the theater. And it's, of course, a sad story, especially for the creators of that, and I've been in contact even with the producer of La Reina's film, for example, El Conde, both Pablo Larraín and Juan de Dios. I've been exchanging about this title, for example, and there was no possibility, even if they were willing to come to the Biennale, because the film was going on platform before.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, those changes, which are... I mean, that's my suggestion now, but which are driven by money, at least from one side, of course. They're not only obvious on the content side, that is on a program and on the film side, but also on the institutional side. I mean, if we look to what's happening with the Berlinale right now, I mean, I was really astonished about the reproach that was made publicly against Carlo Chatrian, that he would be in the cinema too often instead of attending, sponsor events or something. And that was something I really found, quite shocking, actually, to the scene, to read such a thing.
And absolutely, absolutely. And actually, a misunderstanding completely of his profession, actually. This was a big, big mistake. I believe in not separating the function more clearly, because Carlo Chatrian needed to be in the cinema all the time, and this is why it's important to have an artistic director and a managing director separately, and not at the same events as we have here at the Biennale, and doing a different kind of job. And so I don't think absolutely that is a good idea to go back to just one person show, also because it's not true that it's gonna happen, that can work like that, an organization of this kind, in the sense that I'm sure that the new director will not be the person making the payroll while the managing director has that function. So it's just a way of making up a little bit to give the idea of a one unique power, and it's confusing.
It is very much. Power is also one of the topics dealt with in this year's program, and every year the matrix or the life of a program comes out differently. It's very interesting to see there. In some years, a lot of films deal with a specific topic. There are two or three things that I find very striking. One is that there is a lot of science fiction films actually in this yes. year's program. Very interesting and a very fresh thing also to watch, because they are stylistically very different in their forms and also in their visual language. They're experimenting with forms and Ago de Humano, for example, but also then there are animations, sci-fi animations and stuff like that. Is there a favorite one of the science fiction films you especially like in this year?
Yes, I mean, there are several, but in general, I'm fascinated by genre anyhow, and it's incredible that it's in the art house films or in the author cinemas, because not all art house, but it's something still very evocative and powerful. I have several, and I like this year that there are many animations. I think that's something to dive into. Of course, is a form that engages also new generations, but these films are for all ages. And I'm interested anyhow in explore something that is getting richer and richer, and not only focused on a specific kind of aficionados, fanatics, or experts. But among them all, the most subtle and extraordinary, in a way, science fiction film, even if it's just a film, is one really of the film you should not miss. I mean, no, approaching the person who are listening to this podcast, it is La Bête by Bertrand Bonello. This very subtle science fiction, but of course talks about the future and traveling in the past and the possibility of in changing and cleaning our DNA from emotions passing through.
Yeah, it's about this unrequited impossible love, and it's actually a good, I mean, it's an interesting idea, if it were possible to clean the DNA, to get rid of this baggage of emotions or the
and pain. Things
and pain, and then the question, of course, what would we be without pain? I mean, what's human life without pain? What does it, what else does it subtract,
Yes, absolutely brilliant. And so Bertrand Bonello, La Bête, the beast.
Very interesting. And on the one extreme, the science fiction, so going into a future, an unknown future, experimenting with ideas. On the other side, there are a lot of films addressing the indigenous population, the indigenous people, the topic of heritage and the topic of territory and of regaining territory, of unpossession. I mean, Lisandro Alonso with Eureka, for example, but there are Ellensworth, James Benning, what else? The
Bruno
Invention
Porter,
of the Other, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are
The Pretty Flowers.
Yes, and there is a lot of awareness about the importance of talking about space, which space to possess, which space to inhabit, and how it can be extended or recuperated. It's a very vast topic, of course, and I think the films really dive into that in very different ways.
Absolutely. What you're saying, I think, is very interesting, how the cinema can still allow in self itself to approach the alterity, diversity, some things that even the academy is getting scared of, no? To entitle itself, the cinema entitles itself to observe and approach also things that are not deeply known or would belong to a close but another reality, and culture and tradition, we are connected, we are appealed, we respect, but we are not part of, and that is extraordinary. I like this freedom, and I stand for this freedom. So I hope that also this film will raise certain reflections about our way of approaching culture and the culture of the other, and how knowledge is possible, exactly exploring these territories of unknown, where we are asking the others to have access to a certain kind of knowledge we do not belong to. So this, I think, is a very important chapter behind this selection of so many films, as they are dealing with other culture. And of course, there's always a very big ethic concern, but these films are there because...
Perceiving the other is also very often connected to fear. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we don't have to go really far for that. I mean, just thinking about the binary structure of society and the male fear of the female is deeply rooted. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of films dealing with that as well, and not only made by women but also by men. Like, I mean, the most famous one by now, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos film, which deals with the Frankenstein myth, interpreted in a feminist way in this film, because the monster is in a very beautiful body, and she's basically just, because you were mentioning freedom, she's basically just, you know, exercising her freedom to do what she wants and as she likes, and that's terrifying enough for a patriarchal society and for men in particular. And I think that's a very interesting thing, because the topic of Frankenstein is reflected by another film in the program, by Laura Moss's Birth Rebirth, who is picturing two main protagonists or figures, who are the a weird couple, actually. One is a doctor trying to bring dead people to life again, and the other is a woman who just lost her little daughter, and who is trying to kind of like profit from that by bringing back her daughter. And of course, this raises a lot of ethical questions and moral questions, but Moss is filming with a very pragmatic eye, and she's very cool, so to speak, about the things happening, which actually I found very interesting, because it's you know, kind of like contradicting the expectations you have on, you know, the horror genre. You're not expecting a distanced, cool, pragmatic approach about things. You're expecting the gore and the, you know, the emotions, and she's denying all that, actually, which I found very chilly. Yeah,
it's very chilly. It's cool because it's very female approach in a way. It's very pragmatic. All the characters are pragmatic. The director herself is very pragmatic. So it's completely reversing the expectation.
Exactly. So I'm very much for the rewriting of also how we write or how we talk about female directors, because, you know, pragmatic is a female thing to be, you know. It's not,
Absolutely. So
very important to say that. And it deals with the reproductive question as well. But then there are also films about women and about the incapability to love, the inability to show emotions. I'm thinking about Mal, Vivia Mal, which is also interesting to show because, as we know, women are always assigned with, oh, they are the, you know, the persons who are so empathic, and the women can feel all the things and so on. And I'm making a jump now to The Perpetrator by Jennifer Reeder, where it's actually a line in the film, which is actually the core of the whole horror story here, because the main character says, I can feel everything and I don't want it. I don't want this. And, you know, Reeder is constructing this figure that can feel everything, and that brings, you know, the revenge on the world because she can feel everything. So I think it's a really nice idea to kind of like overthrow those stereotypes and the stereotypes also in how we talk about women. So that's very, we will have a panel on that, no?
Absolutely, no. With so talking about all these elements that you pointed out, from the female body, no, to all that contains inside emotions and this transformation in the outside. So a panel with Jennifer Reeder, with Claire Simon, who also is accompanying the festival with her beautiful film Notre Corps. And who else will be?
Marta Mechow, the director of Die ängstliche Verkehrsteilnehmerin, which is very much about reproduction and motherhood, and it's an excellent film as well, an Austrian film. Yeah, I'm very curious about the panel. When will it be?
It is on the 26th, just before the gala with Catherine Deneuve, on Donnerstag 26th. Mm-hmm. In the centrale, in our meeting point, in the Museum Quartier at Kunsthalle, at 6:30.
For the last question of our podcast today, I would like to ask you, is there a film that kind of like surprised you most, disturbed you most, or kind of like emotionally got to you?
That disturbed me recently the most. I have to say, I don't know, many things. I'm attached. I don't want to feel so much. I don't want to stop feeling. But in the program, let's concentrate on that. There are many films that touches me because the topics, not because they're general universal, but some also because get into my contemporary me that is also connected to a motherhood. And there's a beautiful Koreeda monster that is just a tremendous piece of love, lack on love, of love and understanding. And of course, yes, that moved me a lot. But also for other reasons, more connected to the brain also, and to all the kind of feelings, is the Catherine Breillat film. Very, very, very courageous as she is, no? L'été dernier, last summer. It's a film that is dealing with love between people of very different age and with a woman, so having an affair with a boy, with a young, very young man. And that is something we are not prepared to face. And she does it with a very big courage as she is accustomed to. And this is subverting and is putting in crisis our way of understanding also love and relationship and a decent relationship is the ethical question also of our society and the imposition of certain kind of rules. So it's something that, it's challenging.
Yeah, she will be here as well. And she will give a talk with the Drehbuch Forum.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that as well. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.